Welcome to Special Sauce, Sirius XM's podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
One day he finally said, "Have you seen any of my movies?" I said, "I seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid." He's like, "That's it? Really?"
But I'm they
like,
dig that.
He said, "I knew I liked you for a reason."
This week, we are delighted to have back with us chef and food activist Michelle Nishan. Four-time James Beard Award-winning chef with over 30 years of leadership advocating for a more healthful, sustainable food system. He is founder and CEO of Wholesome Wave. He's also the founder of a chef's food advocacy organization, the Chef's Action Network. When I first met him in 1997, he was the chef at a groundbreaking restaurant in Manhattan, Heartbeat. How did you end up connecting with Paul Newman?
And a lot of that came out. It was all eventuality, right? So first, because of the controversy between those who thought Heartbeat was awesome and those who thought
Heartbeat was awful.
I had multiple screws loose, got me invited to really important think tanks with, you know, Walt Willett and his group, Harvard School of Public Health, and Eric Shivian from the Center for Health and Global Environment invited me to join their advisory board and do some work with them. And it was like working with groups like that in conversations where people were actually looking at the global consequences of the human health crisis related to, you know, diet-related disease. That's where I learned about type 2. That's where I started learning that two-thirds of the people, this is the type of diabetes that affects tens of millions of Americans, can be reversed through food, can be prevented through food, yet two-thirds of the people that suffer with diabetes or pre-diabetes type 2 don't have an income that allows them to buy the food they need to prevent the disease.
Right.
So it's like, that's obscenely unjust. So that's what led to founding Wholesome Wave. But it's in that whole journey. Heartbeat kind of took a turn after 2002. You know, there was a kind of a global travel crisis because we had 2001. And then in early 2002, the Greek airline tragedy, you
right.
know, the terrorist attack.
So it was right after September 11th.
Starwood had just bought Chiga Hotels. They bought, you know, all these international portfolios and were tanking. So they kind of put a moratorium and started requiring us to buy from approved purveyors, which means I had to stop buying from farmers.
Right.
So, you know, I had to resign because I couldn't do that. You know,
there's
just, yeah, nothing I had ever done before. So why change now?
Right.
And here's the coolest thing. I remember going home to my wife, Lori, telling her I'm in this weird situation at work. How do I tell my wife I have to quit? Right. So I go home.
I've been there. I know it's not easy.
Yeah. And number five was on the way.
Right.
Okay. Oh, no, had just been born. You know, he's like less than a year old. You know, he was born in January 2001. And it's like in November. And I go to her and tell her what's going on, and she's like, goes to the secretary, pulls out the check ledger, looks at it, does some head math, and says, "We're good till May. We have enough savings to get you through till May. If you don't get like any work, you got to quit." So I was like, "Oh,
wow!"
This is my wife, you know, with these small children and a baby at home.
My wife did the same thing to me, actually.
Yeah, that's so
cool. She was like, "It's rare to find." But I remember coming. I was working at an ad agency, and I just hated it. And and she was like, when I would tell her a story, she'd go, "Well, you can quit," you know. And then I got laid off. The day that she came home from the doctor and announced she was pregnant with our son. So
oh, wow.
I can really relate to this.
Yeah. It's scary. You know, it's kind of like, you know, black hole opening up type stuff. But, you know, it was the thing to do. And, you know, I remember, you know, Florence called me.
Florence Fabricant of the New York Times.
And I had started doing some consulting work. And already was like in the throes of experimenting and lending myself to nonprofits around these food equity issues that were really digging away at me. Because, you know, Heartbeat, it's like type 1 diabetes, you know, we could do what we did with Chris, Lori and I, because, you know, we had a reasonable income. You know, we could make healthier food choices. We could afford to change our food strategy at home. And Heartbeat was a great business plan. I mean, it was a successful restaurant. So it's like I could reflect my personal values in that business plan because we had customers who were willing to pay $30 or $40 for an entree.
Right. So, but how do you translate that to the rest of the world?
Yeah, well, especially those who have $2 to spend tonight on dinner for a family of four.
Right.
How, you know, for the whole family of four, you know, head of broccoli is $2. You know, 8-pack of instant noodles is like $1.49. What's going on the table for dinner tonight? It's not broccoli at all, ever. You know, so that was, so I told her, she's like, so what are you going to do? I'm like, well, I'm going to continue to consult and I'm going to continue my work in the nonprofit world. And she put it in her like front burner thing. And my phone started ringing off the hook with people who wanted me to consult because
wow.
they heard I was going to start
You were
consulting.
An accidental consultant.
I was an accidental consultant. Well, it was kind of like intentional. I had like two clients at the time.
Right.
But then the phone started ringing and I get a call from Alain Sayac, you know, come, you know,
famous French chef
yeah,
who
famous
was involved
yeah.
with the French Culinary Institute now. The,
yeah, original chef
right,
of Lutèce.
Right.
You know, and he's like, you know, we're trying to change our protocols to be more local and more organic. You know, can you come and help us? You know, so I consulted with those guys. Taj Hotels invited me to do a heartbeat in India that we called Pure. Song Airways wanted to have the first food for sale on an airplane, but they wanted it to be healthy. So just, you know, really good sized clients. And then one day I got the phone call from Nell Newman. Paul Newman's daughter, who I had known from the organic,
right.
you know, sector.
Who had already founded Newman's Own,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. So it's a for-profit company. So everybody in the company gets paid real competitive, you know, competitively
right.
to run this top-notch food company that puts out delicious products with integrity. But then a royalty goes back to Newman's Own Foundation.
Got it.
You know, which owns the name. And then they've given away over $500 million.
Wow. So Nell Newman calls you up and says,
yeah, she's like, Michelle, you know, Greg Higgins told me to give you a call. He's a chef in Portland at Higgins Restaurant. We were both on the board of Chefs Collaborative at the time. She's like, you know, my pops wants to open a restaurant, you know, at the Westport Country Playhouse. And I know you live here in Connecticut and we're looking for someone that can help us open a restaurant and stick to the family values, buy local,
wow.
buy organic.
Fascinating.
You know, that whole thing. So I told her, well, you know, I was digging the consultant thing and I'm like,
do I really want to get back to the kitchen?
I'm not going to do it. You know, I'm like, I will help your dad, you know, and, you know, I can carve some time out and I'll act more as a consultant. Didn't charge him. I said, free of charge. I'll help him find an operator. I'll help the operator source locally. I'll help make it painless. And mm-hmm. I can kind of be your litmus test to make sure that whatever operator that you do get is following your values. That's kind of how it started. But over the year and a half of multiple operators not making the grade, not because they didn't want to do all of them were cool with what I was saying, but simple things like refuse to have a hamburger on the menu.
Right.
And Paul was like a simple guy. Meatloaf, black cod, hamburger, chili. That's what he wanted.
Right.
He wanted normal food, the stuff I was raised with, right? So after a year and a half of that, and then falling in love with the guy,
right.
because we would meet over hamburgers at Mario's by the train station
wow.
in Westport.
Did you ever play pool with him? Did you
no,
ever play pool
I
with
never
the hustler?
Played, no way. I suck at pool, for one.
Doesn't matter. He would have hustled you.
No. That's, you know, I think there are two reasons why Paul really dug me. One is that we both do love the same food. And the other was, you know, whenever we would meet and get together and hang out and do whatever we were doing to try to get operators on board for the restaurant, he would like say a line to something that was like from one of his movies. And I would just give him a blank stare.
That's so great.
And he's like, one day he finally said, have you seen any of my movies? I said, I seen Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. He's like, that's it? Really?
But I'm they like, dig that.
He said, I knew I liked you for a reason.
Exactly. That's like Kenji once went to lunch with the creator of Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy was talking about Game of Thrones, and Kenji said, you know, David Benioff's his name, and he said, Kenji said, I have to admit that I've never watched an episode of Game of Thrones. And I think David Benioff really loved that. It's the same thing. It's like, because Kenji wasn't having lunch with him because he's David Benioff, you know? So it's weird. So,
yeah, well, you know, Paul once said, because I did say once, it's like, you know, it's kind of like, what do you get a man on Father's Day who has everything type thing? It's like, there have to be some regrets somewhere, other than, the death of Scott. You know, it's just, for yourself.
Scott was his son.
Yeah, for yourself personally in life. And his was, I just love to go up to a counter in a diner and order a plate of eggs and have a conversation with someone about something other than Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Right.
Just to be able to talk meaningfully about something that has nothing to do with any movie I've ever been in.
Right.
That would be cool.
It's funny, you connected probably because his experience with the death of his son must have resonated with you and in dealing with your son's health condition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the privilege to be connected with somebody of such high intellect and moral character, such everyday common appeal, common sense, the everyday guy type of spirit. But then the sense of humor and the creativity and then the genuine concern for humanity. It's like, who has all that? It's like, who has all those things bundled up beautifully in this package?
Right. With piercing blue eyes.
Yeah, with piercing blue eyes. And they were piercing blue eyes. Incredible.
A quick shout out to one of our sponsors who brings you this message. HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed to eliminate food waste, and offers step-by-step recipes for delicious meals designed to take around 30 minutes to make, all of which are approved by 2 registered dietitians on staff. New this spring, you can expect lighter fare and breakfast options, with each meal coming out to just under $10. And everything is delivered in a special insulated box, always with free shipping. For $30 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code SeriousEats30 when you subscribe.
We're back on Special Sauce, talking with chef and food activist Michelle Nashan. The restaurant begot Wholesome Wave in a certain way, right?
Yes, it did. So, the interesting thing was when we finally had the meeting where, the third operator had gotten themselves kicked out for refusing to serve a hamburger on the menu. And Paul sat me down one day and said, would you please just do this goddamn restaurant with me? And I'm like, and he did. He cussed. I'm just giving you the words. Quotes. Okay. Got that, Gabriel. That wasn't my cuss. Okay.
Okay.
It was Paul's. Anyway, we decided to do it. He said, here's the deal. We'll be 50-50. I want my 50% to go to the Playhouse. And you can do whatever you want with your 50%. And I'm like, well, I've had, and he knew, my feelings about food equity and some of my struggles and everything like that. I'm like, I think I want mine to go to like some kind of food equity thing. We had already agreed we were going to open a farmer's market in the parking lot. That way we get our weekly delivery.
It was a strategy to get free food, free delivery for you.
Yeah, free delivery, man. It's just like create a space for 24 vendors to come to your parking lot and roll the carts out.
Yeah, that's funny.
Roll the carts out and have a big petty cash account.
Right.
So we had already decided to do that. And then my thing was, how do we leverage the activity at the market and create a conversation with farmers to figure out how we can help them set up markets in places like Bridgeport and Norwalk, where people wanted the access to the good food but couldn't afford it, right?
Right.
And how do you get them to go in there in a way that makes it affordable? And it was through those conversations at that market that I really learned the thing we couldn't do is put a farmer in a price-taking position and say, we'll give you access to this awesome market if you go over here and sell your food at a discount. Because like that new market that they're in, as viable as it is, with heirloom tomatoes selling at $6.50 a pound to happy customers, happy to pay $6.50 a pound for an heirloom tomato, you go over here and you sell them for like $2 a pound, you just lost all your money.
Right.
Or even more. So that's where we started thinking through what's going on in the country. I had met Gus Schumacher. The late Michael Batterbury introduced us. Gus is a former...
Batterbury was the publisher of Food Arts.
Correct.
And Gus Schumacher was the ag secretary for a while,
deputy,
right?
Secretary.
Got it.
He was an undersecretary of agriculture under Clinton, which was its third highest post in the USDA, Farm and Foreign Ag Services. But, you know, Gus had told me, well, you know, they're... In two places. In New York City, there's this thing called Health Bucks that I helped Tom Frieden with before he was...
CDC.
Yeah, CDC chief. You should look at that. And there's this other thing that I got funded with some money from the Watermelon Board, Crossroads Market in Maryland, where they're like doubling and giving away vouchers for people on SNAP or WIC.
SNAP is food stamps.
Yeah, food stamps or WIC benefits, which is Women, Infants, and Children Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, so that women in poverty with small children under the age of 5 or pregnant can buy vegetables, that kind of a thing. So he said, take a look. So we looked at him. The one market in Maryland was getting ready to go out of business because it was in such a poor area. I thought Health Bucks was a great idea, but it confused even me. You know, I looked at it, it's like for every $5 you spend in a benefit at the farmer's market, you get a coupon for $2 to spend on vegetables. So I'm like, so is that a one-time thing? Because a bus token's $2.50, you know, subway token's $2.50, you know, to get $2 worth of food to... You know, maybe.
So you started really thinking about the mechanics.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Of getting, how can you get more people access?
Yeah,
to
affordable access.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is Health Bucks is an amazing program. And what I learned is that for every $5, so if you spend like $20, you get, you know, almost $10 in extra grocery money, which is for someone struggling with poverty, that's a lot of money. You know, and so, but it was confusing. So I'm like, how do we make it easier to understand? So that's where we basically said, it's got to be like a 2-for-1 sale. As a restaurateur, I understood that. It's like, you know, you want to introduce somebody to something new and get them excited about it.
Two for the price of one,
baby, you know? So that's what we started doing. We started straight doubling food stamps when spent on fruits and vegetables at farmers markets. And that's what was the birth of Wholesome Wave.
Wow.
You know, was that... And the interesting thing is that simple tweak of just calling it a pure 2-for-1. 2-for-1 is understood by every culture in the globe.
Right.
Middle Eastern, Asian, South Asian, Hispanic, Haitian. It doesn't matter. Somali, African. Doesn't matter where you're from. Everybody understands 2-for-1. You know, so just that simple popularity of the project, and we were using restaurant proceeds to fund it at the time. You know, Paul is like, why don't you just found that nonprofit you've been talking about? You know, why don't you found it? Because, you know, we will give you money from Newman's Own Foundation. There are other donors out there, I'm sure, that would love to support this type of work. So we did. We did. We started in 2007, we founded. By late 2007, we started incentive programs in Connecticut and Massachusetts. Early 2008, we were in San Diego. So in that first kind of 6 months of operation, we were in 3 states and 10 markets. And today we're in 47 states.
Wow.
Close to 1,000 markets, retailers, with doubling food stamps, fruit and vegetable prescription programs and partnerships with doctors' offices, clinics, public hospitals. And we had an effect on the 2014 Farm Bill, $100 million in federal funding to double food stamps when spent on fruits and vegetables. So, you know, it was a great idea that caught us by surprise. And here we find ourselves, you know, like a short 10 years into the thing.
Right. What do you think are the impediments to making more progress? Like, do you feel you're making meaningful progress every year?
Yeah, I think we're making meaningful progress. I mean, from a financial perspective, $100 million, and that's not for us, by the way, that's for the whole field. $100 million is pencil dust when you look at the fact that 45 million Americans spend $66 billion just in food stamps every year. So it's like you divide 100 million against 66 billion, it doesn't even show up on the calculator,
error,
you know? It just doesn't show up. you know, we need to scale the affordable access thing. Yeah, I think the pathway is there's a real business case for it. You know, most people, when they go into this type of work, completely go off of the emotional argument. You know, it's the right thing to do. Look at these, quote, poor people, end quote. And people struggling with poverty don't like to be spoken of that way. It's just there. A lot of these folks just happen to be unemployed longer than they thought they would be. Mm-hmm. And eventually, a lot of them are going to get themselves back up on their feet again. The average food stamp consumer only spends 9 months on food stamps.
Right.
This whole thing of what happens if you change the way the $66 billion on retail food, that's a powerful consumer marketplace. And every food stamp shopper spends 91 cents of their own money. So that's over $100 billion a year to retail food.
So if you could take 1% of that.
You take 1% of that and shift it to fruits and vegetables, to locally grown, to regionally grown.
That would make a meaningful difference.
You're changing the supply chain in a way that brings money to more people. So we had our success on both sides of the aisle in 2014, and that was a very contentious Congress. John Boehner wouldn't even let the farm bill go to the floor in 2012 because he didn't want it to be perceived as an Obama win because it's a bipartisan bill.
Right.
You know, 2014, you know, it's this the same thing. It took 2 years to pass the farm bill. It was a very difficult Congress then, but everybody could align on it because when you looked at the incentives, we were able to prove that participating markets, participating farmers, retailers made infrastructural investments in their businesses to meet this new market demand, that they hired more people, they diversified their crop plantings. This was a real kind of small business package, really, to
right.
change the way food stamp consumers bought food. You
and
know?
So now with yeah. the new administration, do you feel like you're back to square one or not necessarily?
No, I don't, because, you know, a lot of the leaders in Congress that were in places of decision-making power are still there. So the same arguments still hold.
Right.
You know, it's just good business. And now I think especially the opportunity is such that with this new administration and a fully Republican, you know, Congress and a Republican president, everyone's talking about saying we will make investments in taxpayer dollars in anything that either flips the trade deficit or reduces the national debt.
Right. But they also talk about reducing food stamps, you know, and so it gets.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, we will fight tooth and nail to do everything that we can in our power to make sure that that doesn't happen. The reality of it often is more rhetoric to appease your base than it actually is, because so many constituents that actually voted Trump in are from poor rural areas, and they rely on food stamps.
Yeah.
They rely on disability.
Yeah.
They rely on Medicare and Medicaid, which is why there's so much uproar right now over the American Health Care Act. There's uproar over it because you got 60 million Americans who are affected by those programs.
Yeah.
It's one-fifth of the country.
So do you work closely with other organizations like Tom Colicchio's?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. And Tom's on our board, was on our board. He's an advisor now. But, you know, food policy action is one of the best ideas to happen in a long time. You know, the whole notion of scoring people in Congress based on how they vote on food issues. Because when you look at issues like pro-life, pro-choice, right, I can find many people from both camps, right? Pro-life.
Easy to rationalize both positions.
Exactly. Philosophically, religiously, spiritually, whatever you want to call it. Someone can be an ardent supporter of either one and be a good person.
Right.
Not be an evil person.
But who could be against feeding people?
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, to you know, child nutrition, you know, taking free lunch off of the table, you know, for kids struggling with poverty. If you're going to do that, you're a jerk. I mean, and if you're a jerk and you can vote for that, you know, to actually take a meal away from a kid who's struggling with poverty, it's likely that all the decisions that you make when you vote are going to be based on your own personal self-interest or the self-interest of somebody who paid to put you in office.
Right.
You know, so I think when you actually want to evaluate and make your voting decision for someone in Congress, voting on, watching, looking at how they voted on food issues is a great lens to look at their character through.
Sure.
And determine whether someone you want in office or not, right?
So I have one more question before we get to the all-you-can-answer buffet, but how should serious eaters get involved in your incredibly worthy cause? You know, it's like, what should everyday people who, as you say, it's hard to rationalize not being in favor of more people having access to affordable, healthy food.
Right.
Like, what can people do?
Well, so, you know, here in, you know, in the five boroughs, Grow NYC, they're the folks who run, you know, all the green markets in New York City, and a variety of other organizations, you know, Just Food up in Harlem in the Bronx. You know, these groups are the groups that run a lot of the markets where health bucks are happening. And the city funds health bucks, which is amazing. One of the only
health bucks are these twofers you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's for every $5 you spend in a federal benefit at a farmer's market, you get a coupon for $2 of New York State grown produce. One of the few cities in the country. It's, you know, New York was first, then Boston, Tom Menino, Los Angeles. But the organizations that run those markets need donations and volunteers to make a market happen in the South Bronx. You know, so you can engage directly with Grow NYC, with Just Food, with an International Rescue Committee.
And there are those kinds of organizations all over the country.
Yeah,
right?
All over the country. So being able to engage with the organizations that are doing the hard work of seeing to it that these affordability programs get right into the hands of the people that need it the most, that's an amazing thing that you can do. Another thing that you can do is in the midterms when you go to the polls.
Look at the grades.
FPA.org and take
That's
a
look. That's foodpolicyaction.org.
Yeah, foodpolicyaction.org. Go on and look at how the candidates that are available to you to vote for vote on food issues and start to use that lens to put people into office. And don't stop understanding how important every city council seat is.
Right.
From Des Moines, Iowa to New York City, doesn't matter. You know, voting in your local elections, a lot of people kind of hold out. They say, I vote in the important one every 4 years. And it's like, that's actually maybe the least important because it's like that single individual who is president probably has the lesser ability to actually make a difference than if we actually were voting in our city, county, municipal elections and getting the right people in Congress so that we could have laws that are passed that represent all Americans, regardless of income.
Got it.
You know, it's like, look, you know, look at the tough time that Obama had.
Sure.
You know, and he started with a majority in the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
You know, look at, you know, Trump's having a tough time. To me, it's like sometimes does the president really matter if Congress can't get its house in order?
Right, right. So, okay, now it's time for the special sauce, all-you-can-answer buffet.
Okay.
So who's at your last supper, no family allowed? Could be anybody, living or dead.
Dalai Lama.
Dalai Lama.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Keep going. You have three more seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a table of four.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Dalai Lama, Paul Newman. Oh, goodness gracious. Dalai Lama, Paul Newman. You know what? Nile Rodgers. I really like Nile.
Nile Rodgers is
awesome.
He's a
really, really, really thoughtful guy. And one more, Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Wow. That is a great table.
Yeah, I think so.
I might have to come.
Yeah.
So what are you eating?
My mom's chicken and dumplings.
That's awesome.
Because then she's there, too, by default.
That's great.
Yeah.
And what's for dessert?
Conversation.
Conversation. I like that. Yeah. So what do you cook? So you still have one child at home?
I have two at home.
Two at home. So what do you cook when there's not much in your house to work with? You know, so like when you get home from a day's work and it's like, I'm not going to the store.
Sorry, dude. Not a big problem for us most times of the year because we have a quarter acre garden in our backyard.
You know? Got it. So, but, you know, in the winter, you are in the Northeast.
Yeah. I just, you know, Frankly, warm, hard-boiled eggs with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, salt, and pepper.
Wow.
It's a pretty good way to go.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. So do you even believe in the concept of guilty pleasures when it comes to food?
Oh, yeah.
So what are your guilty pleasures?
Oh, my God. Smothered pork chops, you know, fried chicken, barbecue. I have all kinds of them, man. Are you kidding me, man?
Is there even a processed food in there?
Yeah, butter, bacon, and butter. You know?
That's good. All right. So who's the one person, and for you, I do have to add the caveat, it's someone you don't know because you know a lot of people, that you'd like to break bread with just to hear how they think about the world and what they do?
Somebody on the just far extreme right, a seeming disconnect between how America came to be and where we're at today and why anybody should be excluded from
Barry Goldwater, Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, maybe Goldwater, because I remember, you know, my parents struggling. They're Farm Belt Republicans, and, you know, they're like, you know, stay away from Goldwater. You know?
Right.
So you'd like
to have lunch with him just to see how he thinks, just to see where that all came from.
Yeah, if in having that civil conversation where you can each get under the hood of the other and come to some honest to God understanding of what motivates it, because I do like to believe that every human being, regardless of political opinion, is basically inherently good.
Right.
You know, you get corrupted, evil comes in, evil takes over, whatever it might be. But I'm sure there are plenty of people on the far, far right who are absolutely really good spiritual people who do care deeply about genuine things. What's the disconnect that allows them to be that way in the core of their soul and still want to exclude other people from the things that they benefit from?
Interesting. Yeah. So it's just been declared Michelle Nishan Day all over the world. What's happening? What's happening on that day?
Everyone's chilling out, baby. You know, it's all just kind of like sitting back and taking stock in all that you have to be thankful for. And, you know, you get to cook with whoever you want, whatever it is that you want to cook and serve. Amazing beverage buffet. There for every, just like, you know, loosen the spirit, loosen the tongues, and sit down and know for that one day.
Share a meal and chew the fat.
Yeah. And we're all going to be here tomorrow, you know, and the world is going to move forward. And we can all dream that every day could be just like today.
Ah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your special sauce with us, Michelle. Yeah, it's so great to finally, you know, we haven't seen each other in a while, and you've been up to a lot of cool shit.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff, man, no doubt.
So on behalf of all serious eaters everywhere, I want to thank you as well for leading the fight to create a just, healthy, delicious, and sustainable food system with Wholesome Wave and another organization that you are a part of that we didn't even get to talk about, Chefs Action Network.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll get that next time, and we
Sounds
will see
good.
You next time, Serious Eaters. And thanks again, Michelle.
My pleasure.